Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me all right? Good morning. So welcome to the June 14th, 2017 Safety Officer Teleconference. Thank you for joining the call. This call is being recorded to be available for playback later as a podcast. My name is Walter Krajalis, President of Aeronomics. I am your host and discussion moderator. I am an ISBAO auditor and aviation consultant and attorney, and I'm proud to host these teleconferences now for the past 3.5 years as a means for safety officers to get together to ask questions of each other and bring up issues, compare notes, hear ideas, dealing with aviation safety and safety management systems. Our sponsor I wish to thank is Allianz Aviation Insurance. I want to thank them for their support and all of their efforts in enhancing aviation safety. Quickly, some ground rules. The call is 30 minutes. Again, this call is being recorded to be available later as a podcast. So with that said, when you wish to speak, no need to introduce yourself with your full name or company name. Just your first name is fine. Please use your mute button feature on your phone. This helps cut down on background noise, but please remember to unmute yourself when you want to talk. I also am calling from a landline, so we should be good with the phone system. But if for some reason the call drops off, I'll just dial back in. All right, so just a recap. Last call 3 weeks ago, we discussed that unfortunate Lear 35 fatal crash at Teterboro, in which the crew was most likely on a repositioning flight and was performing the ILS-6 approach, circle the land, runway 1, very, very common approach there. And that led to a discussion about the statistical increased risks with repositioning flights or deadhead flights. I'm not saying that, that this was a particular cause related to that unfortunate crash. However, we discussed that during repositioning flights, it's not unusual that flight discipline can get more lax and casual, which may lead to mishaps. And then we further discussed the aspect of piloting hand flying skills and the importance of maintaining proficiency with your motor skills. In fact, someone pointed out, and I looked it up, there is a FAA SAFO letter numbered 17007 dated just on May 4th of this year, which the subject matter was about manual flight operations proficiencies and 121 operator operations, of the importance of it. So I haven't posted the podcast for that last call yet. I will later. But I just wanted to pause for a moment. And did anyone have any additional comment that they would like to add about our discussion from last call? If so, go ahead and mute yourself and speak up. Anybody? Okay, not hearing any. I do also want to mention that we also discussed the high-altitude jet upset incident that was that occurred with the Challenger 604 over the Arabian Sea that got caught in the wake turbulence of a big Airbus A380, and we had a discussion about that. Anybody have any additional comments they would want to add to that? All right, moving along. So it is a regular feature to briefly discuss any aviation accidents or incidents pertinent to business aviation since our last call. So what did pop up was last week It was reported, or this week actually, it was reported by AIN, Aviation International News, about a beach jet dual engine flame out and allegedly dead sticked it into Buffalo. This was one of tribal management companies' beach jets. And yesterday, the CEO corrected the record by saying that it was a single engine failure. There was two air start attempts, and it was a textbook single engine landing, diverting into Buffalo, which makes a lot of sense to me because I was saying, wow, you know, they did stick into Buffalo. Kudos. But this was a single engine landing. Maybe why the CEO, Chip Schultz, basically said maybe it got blown out of proportion because there was a talent on board, an actress, and who tweeted about it, so who knows. Anybody have any other incident or accidents worth noting to talk about or related to this beach jet incident? Guys, tumbleweed a little bit. So it's time to open up the call to any new topics. So anyone on the call, do you have an issue that you're dealing with or, you know, encountering that you want to bring up for discussion for the group? This is your opportunity to maybe ask those embarrassing questions without really identifying yourself.
Okay.
So do you have anyone have an issue?
Yeah, good morning, Walter and colleagues. This is Bob. Let me start by just asking if anybody on the line has applied successfully to EASA for third country operator status.
Okay, so the question is, has anybody on the call applied to EASA for third party, what was it again?
Third country operator permission, TCO, as EASA calls it.
For air carrier 135?
That's correct.
Okay. Is anyone familiar with that in their operations, any 135 operators on the call?
This is Craig. Yeah, we received our TCO back in June or July of last year.
Okay. Now, did you get any pushback from them regarding your FMS? And specifically, you know, they wanted, in their initial communications, they wanted a list of our SPIs, and target levels and alert levels, and I'm a little bit confused as to you know, exactly what they're asking for. I mean, I understand FBIs, but as far as, did you just make up a target that we want less, you know, or did they give you any guidance whatsoever?
So, you know, what happened was, and I should be fully transparent here. This was all done prior to my taking the position of safety manager where I'm at now here at the company I'm with. So a lot of the legwork was already done, and I kind of came in right at the tail end where they basically just gave us the or granted us the TCO. But my understanding, it was a very long process leading up to it. I don't believe at the time when they went through it that they required SPIs and SPTs. However, they required us to have a documented safety management system. And, you know, there's also the, which probably can spring a separate conversation of itself, that said a state-sponsored SMS. And the understanding that we had, or the company that we had at the time, was that Isbayo Stage 3 would satisfy that requirement, and in fact it did. There's discussion or rumor that we've heard is that that will not be the case in the future, and that, you know, we'd have to be Part 5 compliant as a not just a voluntary participant, but an active conformant to that Part 5. Going back to the SPIs and SPTs, we just went through our Isbayo Stage 3 recertification here the first of the year, and that was one of the elements that, you know, was new from previous in inspections and audits is developing SPIs and SPTs. And so we went ahead, we were already gathering data, and we just had to basically formulate it into something that was quantifiable, and then put those targets. But target is kind of a bad representation. You don't want to have a target of how many, you know, hazard reports. You want to have something that's below a target, I guess. And so we use a limit, and we stay below that limit. I probably am not answering your question sufficiently, but at the time, they did not require, but it is now definitely a requirement. And basically, it's just extracting the data that you probably already have, and then just making it into a quantifiable target. And just for example, one of the SPIs that we have about 8 that we're monitoring now. One of those is how many mechanical interruptions did we have over the past year, and per 1,000 flights, what does that break down to? And then, of course, what would a limit be, or an upper limit of that range be? So hopefully I'm giving you something to work with here, but I may be completely off base on what you're asking as well.
Well, thanks. That's helpful. We're a small company, and we've had an SMS for a year and a half, and you know, we have a grand total of, you know, 16 reports. So, you know, it's a small sampling, and I tried to group them into several, found that I could group 15 of the 16 into three broad areas. So I gave those three broad areas our SPIs. And our target was to reduce by 30% over, you know, per, based on the number of flights over the next year. I don't know if they're going to come back and ask for that in a year. But, I mean, you have to come up with something. So, you know, I just pull that out of thin air. It's a good target, you know, reduction in errors. So we're, you know, looking at those and doing, having identified those areas, we're doing additional training in those areas, which is the whole point of, you know, SMS is to identify weak areas and improve on them. Anyway, the EASA unfortunately flagged us to have a new SMS relatively 18 months old. I said we were in phase two, and they came right back and said, well, you cannot have a TCO unless you're at least phase three. So we're going to call that a finding, and you know, you have to come up with a plan to get up to phase three. You have 30 days, or we're going to find you a non-compliance and report you to the FAA. And I just had to chuckle at that, since, of course, right, the FAA has no requirement for an SMS. But yet, you know, we're trying to satisfy another agency that has a good deal of control over you know, our operations. We have worldwide operating authority, but apparently we can't go to Europe. So we have our TCO. So we're pedaling hard.
Yeah, it, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we deal with a lot of, as our own 135 certificate, you know, we also do some outside charter, and we deal a lot with those European operators where they are required to have a state-sponsored SMS program. And, you know, I think that they kind of naturally just assume that the FAA mandates that we have one, and they're very surprised sometimes when I tell them, no, in fact, we don't even have to have one. It's an industry best practice that we have one, but, you know, it's not required. And, you know, I'm sure the day will come when it's going to be mandated, but but we'll hold off till then, till they do force the issue. But anyway, yeah, it's an interesting thing. Like I said, the rumor is now as though the EASA is saying that Isabel stage 3 may not even be, the standard, and we'll have to have that Part 5 compliance. But nobody can, put pen to paper to say that, that it's going to be required. So we're still in a wait-and-see mode as well. But,
Hey, guys, this is Walter. Just a clarification question. When you guys are saying stage 3, are you referring to ISBAO stage 3?
That's correct.
So they recognize the ISBAO registration?
Well, not exactly. They talk about SMS phases. There's phases 1 through 4.
Right.
Of the ICAO recommended SMS program.
Okay, so that staging number, not necessarily ISBAO's then.
I'm sorry, say it again?
They're referring to that stage numbering. The FAA stage numbering is slightly different from the ISBAO one. ISBAO goes 1, 2, 3. FAA is 0, 1, 2, 3. And ICAO, I don't recall. And it's also interesting, I'm fairly certain that the FAA has filed a differences letter with ICAO saying, they don't have the state-sponsored SMS requirement. That should be a matter of record with that any inspector can look up. So, and just one last comment, and I'll let you guys keep. If we're talking about ISBAO stage 1, 2, 3, it's not a requirement that you have to wait out the 2 years to move up a stage. If you're a stage 2 and you've only been a stage 2 for 6 months, there's nothing necessarily preventing you from pursuing a stage 3 as long as you meet the standards for it and, pass an audit for it. There's not necessarily a requirement to wait 2 years.
That's my understanding as well.
Yeah. Interesting. So, Bob, did you get does anybody have any other comments about this?
Well, yeah, that was helpful. I appreciate any and all input. In fact, I'm on my way to the office to continue pushing this little rock uphill. I am curious how long it takes. I mean, this program has only been in effect, this third country operator program, for about 2.5 years. And when they first announced it, everybody rushed in to apply before it became mandatory. We're late to the game because we just got our worldwide operations specifications, so there was no point in applying prior, and of course the management wants it issued yesterday, and I'm kind of the guy going, well, we've got this process we need to follow, and requirements to be met that haven't been met yet, and so when I hear other operators saying, yeah, it took a while, and we've been at it less than a month, and we get back and forth with our guys and over there. Of course, I happen to be on the West Coast, so we've got a 9-hour time difference between us and Cologne, which is where this apparently is based.
And so it
makes communication a little tough.
Yeah, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, and if I am, just you don't have to answer, but. Just for edification for those listening that may not be as familiar with 135, so this third country approval, is that just to pick up people out of their country or to land in their country under 135?
No, it is any operation into, out of, within. The only exception, as I understand it, would be overflying. If we went from New York to Rome, not sorry, New York to Cairo, it would be okay. But no, it's a U.S.-based flight taking all U.S. citizens anywhere in the EASA land, which includes all the EU plus Iceland and Switzerland and all the guys who are kind of hanger-oners. And I'm not sure what the penalties are if you show up, but without one. But you can be sure that they may end up putting the virtual food on your airplane.
You're right. Well, good discussion. And I guess one more clarification is that this is not applicable to Part 91 operations, presume. Yeah.
Not
yet.
Although some of these inspectors have really wonky ways of backdooring that by saying, well, you have a commercial license, aren't you flying commercially?
I should note, though, that we've been, all of our aircraft our 135 aircraft have been compliant. We have all the documentation on every aircraft, and it's very subjective as to the inspectors as well if you have the appropriate documentation and what they're looking for. And we've received notices that we have a violation where one time it worked out perfectly, and the next time an inspector didn't like what he saw, and we received notice that we were in violation. And then of course the appeals process goes on for quite some time to say we were compliant, and there's also that element as well, depending on where you're landing and who you're dealing with. So here we go.
Here we go.
Yeah, everyone, of course, is subject to a SAPA check, and 91, 135, 121, 125, what have you. And, yeah, very subjective has been my personal experience with those SAPA checks. But bringing it back around to the 135 world and the TCO, one of the questions on the application, is have you had a SAPA check? Because they can go into their records and take a look and see, whether you've been good kids or not, according to their inspectors. And clearly, since assuming we get our approval at some point, obvious we will be targeted for a SAPA check, which is fine as long as it's fair. But as you noted, not uniformity is not their style. Let's just put it that way.
Understood.
Good way.
Unfortunately, it's still the case somewhat in our own country with the FAA and inspectors. It's getting better, I would say, generally. But yeah. Does anybody have any additional comments to this? Well, thank you for bringing that up, Bob, and thank you, Craig, for your participation. We still have time, but does anybody have that weird issue that or something they would want to bring up and discuss? Doesn't have to be weird. It can be.
Another item, Ms. Brian, another item regarding SMS, particularly as Bayo. One of the issues we're grappling with is how the heck do you measure the effectiveness of your fatigue management program?
Okay. Thank you, Brian. That's good. Anybody care to comment how they do it and if it's working? I think everybody went to sleep. That was a joke. I can share with you, Brian, what I've seen as an auditor. again, it's somewhat dependent upon the size and complexity of the operation of how they do that. But I've seen everything from, you know, simple surveys, you know, where once a quarter or whatever period of time you want, the pilots are surveyed as to how do they feel about their duty days, have they ever flown fatigued. That's probably the barely acceptable procedure, in my opinion. What is maybe a little more tightening of that is keeping track of anything that comes within 2 hours of your duty day limit, and it's required that the crew fill out a survey as to how they felt at the end of that duty period. Obviously, it would be mandatory if they ever extended it. Again, in this survey, you can formulate your own questions, you know, on a scale of 1 to 5, how tired were you? It can be subjective. It makes it difficult, especially if you're a smaller operator, as far as anonymity, if somebody really wants to admit that they were tired. I know some operators are somewhat using, I don't know if they've made it policy yet, there are some of these fatigue management programs available out there. In fact, we have a podcast, one of our earliest podcasts with somebody from, I'm going to forget the name, the Pulse something. You know, where they have the device on the iPhone, it's an app, or the iPad, where it's actually a objective test of fatigue, you know, with hand-eye coordination. So, you know, that gives an actual score, and that's a requirement afterwards, that, you know, after a certain duty cycle. But just generally, on some regular cycle, and I would say quarterly at least, you know, collect that information. If anybody reports their fatigue and that type of thing. Is anybody doing something different or on one of those programs that they want to share?
Okay, well, those are some good ideas. Appreciate that. We just found it kind of a daunting task, how you would actually make that measurement. So, yeah, the surveys, yeah, as Mickey Mouse as they may be, at least it's something. So thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Sure. And I would say anything subjective, if you're going to have questions like that, is to give some kind of definition of what is a five being very tired, like I can't wait to hit my head, to hit the pillow kind of thing. You know, kind of give a general description of what you think a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 should score out at. Because who's kidding who? I mean, we are tired. Are we as fresh as being awake after 1 hour? No. But are we to a point that our fatigue is affecting our abilities? You know, there's folks that they don't want to admit anything to anybody, and so you want to have the process take that in consideration, that it's open and there's no discipline taken for that. You know, if they are reporting they're tired, then one has to deal with that in some form or fashion, shortening the duty day or whatever other mitigation techniques there are. Any last comment on that from anybody on fatigue management?
The one thing that you could probably put in too is if you're doing your risk assessment tool. Before each flight leg, you know, you could incorporate a higher score for, you know, operations that have been, that are prolonged operations or, you know, long duty day type operations. That's one little thing that you could probably include in your answer to them, that you've put that into your risk assessment for your frat, I guess.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good idea. And maybe to take that idea one step further is part of the process of evaluating it is just say, well, we've had three of our, you know, out of 100 frats, we average two that it's a long duty day, or we average 15 or something like that, so that you have an idea of the pace and your type of operation. How long, you know, how often do you go right up to the limit? So it is still a weak area. What I find in audits, people are, you know, a little bit in the head in the sand about it. You got to do something. And you know, there are vendors out there. It's not asking, you know, under ISBAO, it's not asking you. I mean, that's what's great about ISBAO. It has that flexibility. It tells you what to have, not how to do it. And so you have that flexibility. So, all right. Well, I see it's a little past 12, and so it's time to wrap up the call. I want to thank all of you for dialed in and joined the call, and especially for those of you who shared your comments. Sign up for our economics Twitter feed, and please join the LinkedIn group that we set up for safety officers. It's on our webpage at aeronomics.com. I want to thank Allianz again for their sponsorship. Our next regularly scheduled call is in 2 weeks. We kind of had a three-week break this the way the calendar falls, but in 2 weeks from now, June 28th. Keep your comments and questions coming in. I'm happy to launch a question from somebody emailing an issue in. So, again, thank you. And in signing off, it's all about identifying hazards and mitigating risks. So thank you, and talk to you again in 2 weeks. Goodbye.
Thanks, Walter. Take care.
All right,
thank
bye.
You, Walter. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Hey, Walter?
Yeah.
Hello? This is Bob. I did try to sign up for the LinkedIn group, but I haven't seen anything from it yet.
Okay.
I don't know how often you check, but
I'll get my best man on that.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right. You bet. Thanks.
Bye-bye.